Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good afternoon and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I'm your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, all across Europe, Italy, all the way to Greece, all the way to Asia, in Japan, Malaysia, India, all the way to New Zealand, and Australia. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I ask that you join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and you can interact with the guests that I bring on the show. I ask that you subscribe and leave a rating and review on wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Himalaya app, and the Google Play Music app. Wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts, please leave a rating and review if you can. On the show are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, basically amazing people that are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does just that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show during our live broadcast Tuesday through Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, you can join at 657-383-1109. Again, the number to call in for any questions that you might have, 657-383-1109. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my guest for today, Christine Rose. Christine, welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Hi, Sean. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
I'm super, super excited to have you on the show. We met at an event called National Publicity Summit. Steve Harrison puts that on in New York City. And when I heard your story, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have you on the show. I haven't had this type of guest on my show before. So I'm really excited. We're almost 250 episodes in, and I have not as much as you have tackled that Me Too, right? So I'm really looking forward to having you on the show and what value that you're going to bring with us today.
Thank you so much.
So the title of this episode is Life Beyond Me Too with author and coach Christine Rose. Christine Rose is an award-winning ICF, which is the International Coaching Federation, and Taylor Protocol's certified business and executive coach, speaker, and author. As CEO of Christine Rose Coaching and Consulting, a boutique coaching firm in the greater Seattle area, Christine employs her business experience, intuition, and coaching expertise to bring transformation to individuals and organizations, helping business leaders grow their leadership skills, teams, and companies. Ms. Rose brings her life experience as an abuse survivor and her coach approach to transformation to her first book, Life Beyond Me Too, Facilitating Global Transformation. A mom of two adult daughters, she's a member of Forbes Coaches Council, graduate of Georgetown University, and Coach U's Advanced Coaching Program, and holds a fundraising management certificate from the University of Washington. Christine is a volunteer facilitator for Washington and coach the ICF Global in the United Nations Ignite Global Program, coaching NPO executives. She is delighted to serve as board secretary for Urban Business Support and on advisory boards for educational communities worldwide and Attain Housing, which is a homeless housing agency near Seattle. If you want to book a call with Christine Rose, there is a link. It's the Bitly link, book meeting with Coach Christine. Click on that link and schedule a call today. Her website is christinerose.coach, and her Facebook and LinkedIn links are right there in show notes. Click on those, friend her, like the pages, and connect with what she's doing. I'm telling you, she is doing amazing, amazing work inside the space. And so, Christine, as I read this, I have to know, what is your why? Why do you do what you do?
Oh, my why is love, and it's because my mission is so much to empower women and girls and to empower the male allies that support them. I have been powerless in a deep way. And so my why is to bring the powerfulness that I have found in my life and to help every woman and girl that I can to take that power, to take their power and to use it to create their best future for themselves and for the people in their lives.
Wow. And I love the mission because I have daughters. They are 12, 5, and almost 2 years. I cannot believe she's going to be almost two. Oh my gosh, it's crazy. I can't believe my 5-year-old is going to start kindergarten this year. That's what so fast they grow up. But I have
three girls.
It is amazing. And I have three girls, and I cannot imagine. I cannot think of what I would do, of what I could do if something was to happen to them. First of all, I'm not emotionally equipped to bury a child. God has not given me that power. But this movement that we're talking about, and when you're empowering these young girls, that's got to be so emotional for some people and what they've been through.
Oh, you know, every girl and every woman lives in a world where 1.4 billion of us are or will be victims of violence from either a partner or spouse or victims of sexual violence from a non-partner. And that's according to the World Health Organization.
Jeez.
And so that's, it's just absolutely, it's impossible to wrap your mind around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, for girls starting when they're two, to be able to just say, you know, no, I don't want to sit on my uncle's lap and run the opposite way. And for a family just to say, hey, you know what, we're going to let her not do that right now. That's empowering to her. For a 5-year-old to be able to walk, you know, a half a block and not have somebody harass her, that's empowering for her. And, you know, for a 12-year-old to be able to want to go into a camp on how to do gaming or how to do STEM, you know, when she's 12 for that summer camp and to, you know, break the mold about what society is telling her she's supposed to do, that's empowering for her. And
yeah.
At every different stage, it's about, you know, creating those opportunities. And I generally work, you know, I did a lot of volunteering with girls of every age as a Girl Scout leader and as a volunteer. In fact, I was awarded Outstanding Volunteer by the Council for years of volunteering with girls. But now my clients are business owners, many of them women business owners, and it's so empowering when you have a product idea that you can launch or when you have, you know, years of service and then you're able to, you know, the next year double your profitability or whatever, you know, whatever your goal is, to right. say, yeah, I can do that and go do it, that's empowering.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. So what was your transformation moment? I love the fact that your book is called Life Beyond Me Too, Facilitating Global Transformation. So I'm actually going to double up on a question. First, I want to know what transformation means to you. And then I want to know, what was a transformational moment that changed your life and then put you on the path to what you're doing today?
Oh, those are really great questions, Sean. When you think about the transformers and how they go from one shape to another, that's a great picture of transformation. So, you're still you, right? But but you end up completely different. So it's a thorough, huge change. And really it strikes at your ability to show up in a whole different way. That's a transformation. It's like, and it's, I think about like a butterfly, I mean, when they're a caterpillar, they're really not all that spectacular, but they can go through this amazing transformation and come out absolutely stunning and be able to do things they could never do before. Those are kind of transformations that I think of.
Awesome.
And for your for your other question, Sean, for me, my transformation was lifelong, because think about your 5-year-old daughter, and that was how old I was when my first Me Too story happened, and it was attempted rape. Okay, so, and then I lived in a home with 3 abusers in my home. My transformation,
wow.
And I can think of a transformational moment, because what I had learned as a child and kind of how I had survived and kept going in my life was to take the real me and lock me deep inside. And so I had the lights are on, but nobody home, really. So to be fully present and show up in life was something I rarely did. And so I learned to create an appearance of having it all together. And, and I survived by, finding places to be. So I lived at the library, and I went home as little as possible. And I engaged in learning and in reading as a great way to kind of navigate some rough years.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in my life story, there was a moment after I was in my last career stint before I retired, and I was the development director for a nonprofit housing agency then. My condo was undergoing transformation because it was completely gutted, and I was having problems with my contractors finishing the work. So I had been in this hotel, staying there for several months, and it was supposed to be a couple weeks. And it was just like crazy. And I had gone through a divorce the year before. I had gone into the empty nest phase, and my kids are now 30 and 28, but I had gone through that empty nest thing, and I had moved the year before, and I changed jobs. So I'd been through so many transformations all at once, and I also had some haters kind of come into my life, and it was really just a really difficult time. And there was a moment in there where I was feeling like, geez, this is too hard. I don't want to do this anymore. Maybe I should just give up. And I started thinking about, is there a way to check out that wouldn't hurt my kids? And I couldn't think of one. But at the same time, I had been going through I had decided early on in using Facebook from the very beginning that my goal is to bring positive value on my Facebook page. So I had the habit of daily putting out what I was grateful for. And I had a transformational moment at one time, at that point in time when I was kind of weighing this idea of, wait, maybe I don't want to be here anymore on the planet, to I express what I'm grateful for every day. And
yes.
The thought occurred to me that I can't take both those roads. I have to pick one of those roads. And that gratitude road, that's a road of empowerment. And so I needed to get myself, you know, some help. And I did. I went to, I had already done years of counseling, but I went back into counseling. I had done some coaching and I went back into coaching. I did a lot of inner work and it, you know, was rocky, but that moment of seeing that, hey, you know, powerlessness gives up and checks out, but powerful people find the good, express the gratitude, and get the help they need and move on.
Definitely.
So that was a transformational moment. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of men and other girls that go through similar feelings where things are really rough for them. And I want to empower them. I want to help to make sure that anybody who I run into sees the value in their life and sees the power that they have to change the world.
That's so powerful. I like that a lot. I always believe that my kids have that ability, because like my 2-year-old, almost 2-year-old, she almost died twice before birth. She suffered from newborn hemolytic anemia. My wife's blood was trying to kill the baby.
Wow.
So we're getting blood
transfusions
and everything, whatever. I'm like, why would God make this happen? Right? Like, why would this moment, like, why would she be dealing with this? And she may not ever remember. She'll never remember, but her body is being strengthened by these moments, these hard times that she's experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why would God do this and then not do something amazing with her life? So I already know and believe that something amazing is going to happen. The reason I love that question is because I've noticed in the resilience training that I deliver that sexual assault advocates, like victim advocates, become victim advocates because they were or are or were a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the transformational moment that happens in your life usually is the catalyst that puts you on the path to what you're doing. And so I always like to get the story behind the story, because it's sometimes something we don't share on Facebook or social media, or we only tell our story like if we're speaking on stage. So I love the fact that we can have these type of conversations here, because somebody listening right now is going, I don't know what this means. I was assaulted, or I was sexually harassed at work, which doesn't seem to be as prevalent as it was back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Didn't seem like, right? I mean, just my opinion. Even the military has kind of backed off on that type of stuff. You know, women are in combat and women are taking more of a leadership role in the military. I love the fact that we can take our transformation, no matter what it is, and use it for purpose. That's what I love the most.
Yes, it's great, isn't it? Yes.
Absolutely.
And I wish I could say that the evidence and the statistics in my research in the book backed up what you were saying
about sexual harassment in the workplace, how much it impacts
people. Yeah, there were a record number of claims last year.
A record number of sexual harassment claims?
Yeah.
Out of any other year?
You know what? I had to go back. I would say it was higher than the year before. So
wow.
What happened is I think that Me Too gave people the freedom or gave them the courage to go ahead and speak out. Yeah.
That's true. You know, okay, so yes, I'll agree to that. And maybe that's why the claims are so much higher. I got nothing. I feel like, because I mean, I know a lot of people that have jobs. Like, it's just something that we don't talk about. It's not like before where they're like, oh my God, that really happened? You know, now it's like, it happened. Like, yes, it does. It happens. Like, and so, yes, the Me Too movement has given people a voice and given people the power. I don't have any evidence, but I just don't hear it as much anymore. When the Me Too was going on, it was like, holy crap. Like, I didn't think it was this bad, you know? But I haven't, I mean, even in 2019, like right to this day, like I haven't heard too many people like, yeah, I got sexually harassed at work again. You know, like it's not as prevalent, I guess, not as mainstream or in the news, or people aren't talking about that moment in time as much as when it first happened. That's what I noticed. So maybe that's
yeah,
where I get my information
yeah.
from. People's behavior.
No,
it's not mainstream anymore.
And you know what you said is true about what's happening kind of with the media with Me Too. Because in 2017, in October 2017, it was big news. I think there's a little fatigue in terms of people just, I'm not sure I really want to hear this much anymore.
Right.
And so even though there was a 50% increase in sexual harassment lawsuits that the EEOC filed in 2018 over 2017, it's still not hitting the front pages the way that it used to. And the conversation's
right.
kind of going in different ways. So that's part of the reason why I wrote the book was, let's make sure that we're having transformational conversations so that our next generation of girls aren't going to come out. Because, again, in the Me Too moment, when there were all those stories coming out on social media, there were 12 million stories that came out in a 24-hour period of time.
Yep.
And that's a lot of people. So, you know, it would be great to keep the conversations going so that we don't have a generation that brings out another 12 million stories. Like, let's just stop it from happening. So some things have changed. I talk about that in the book. Yeah.
Perfect. Have you noticed, and I'm going to reference a movie after I get your answer. Have you noticed the difference between what was acceptable 10, 15, 20 years ago, what we were talking about 10, 15, 20 years ago, and our behavior now? How big is that shift?
Oh, you know, it's big. And, In my book, I talk about kind of the culture before Me Too, and if Me Too was a transformational moment in the culture, then I'm referring to what happened before Me Too as old normal. And, you know, if you look at the culture, there's so many things that have happened
right.
that have really like shown that, and they're actually in the research on popular culture, just the objectification of women kind of came out of the closet and just went up on everybody's walls and in everybody's audio and on everybody's video. And it's pretty alarming. Like when they looked at even like at song lyrics and what people had in their song lyrics compared to now, or in terms of what people were watching, in terms of the global firestorm. I mean, there's so much porn going out there, and the biggest industry is sex trafficking, and it's absolutely crazy. I mean, I, as a parent of kids, I'd be watching my kids just make sure that they stay close and they're inside my eyes because people go missing. So, I call this stuff old normal. And have there been changes since Me Too? You know, absolutely. There's some good changes happening. So in terms of companies investing in training, and, you know, the training isn't necessarily going to cause the change, but actually companies are saying, hey, we want a culture that's safe and that's diverse, and we want a great place for our employees to be, and letting go of leadership that's not going to buy into that. That's happening. And that's happening at, you know, was at first it was at just the highest levels, but that's happening across the country at almost every level. So that's one change. I think there's another change is, like, women are saying, hey, you know, we need to be part of the conversation so that people can, who say, hey, the problem's not that bad, they're not the ones who are being objectified. So to recognize that organizations that, you know, increase the numbers of women in leadership are not having the same kind of harassment reporting as, or risks as numbers that don't have those women in leadership roles. Another thing is changing the structure of an organization. So there's more accountability, there's more cross accountability. It's smart to not have silos where there's too much concentrated power in one place, because harassment is related to power, and it's a power move. It's not just about somebody, you know, being sexually aroused or anything. It's about having power over somebody else. That's when it happens. So companies are addressing stuff like that for sure.
Mm-hmm. So the movie I watched today was Philadelphia. Remember?
Oh, sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing. Can you repeat that question?
Sorry, the movie that I was referencing, or that I want to reference, that, you know, that I mentioned before, was Philadelphia. Have you seen that movie?
I have not seen that movie.
Oh, wow. So Philadelphia
is with
Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington. They're both lawyers.
Okay.
It was made in 1993. And Tom Hanks was wrongfully terminated because he is gay and has AIDS. So they try to frame him to say that his work was subpar, but in fact, they are bigots, or basically firing him because he's gay and he has AIDS. And so it was bringing to light that moment, right? In the movie, and I'm in a room with a bunch of guys and some women, and we're watching this movie, you know, just buying some time, just waiting for things to pass, just watching this movie real quick. And you look at people's faces, because there's, like, they walk out of the courtroom in one scene, and they walk outside, and there's, like, people protesting and being hateful. And there are signs, and we're reading the signs. We probably, like, read the signs. Like, there's some pretty hateful stuff on those signs. And the way that they reference that community and that disease and that, like, we're all looking at each other like, geez, like, it was almost uncomfortable listening to that stuff. But back then, that's what they thought and believed. And now it's just not, it's just uncomfortable for people to talk that way. You know what I mean? So I look at it, I'm like, I wonder back then when we looked at sexual harassment, if it was, like, acceptable, but now we're like, dude, that's really wrong. Don't do that. You know what I mean? Where back then it was like, oh, they're just women. Like, who cares? And now we're like, dude, like, respect. Right? I would bet that that's the shift that needs that. If it hasn't happened, it will. But I look at that movie and how it made us feel listening to people have hate speech about that community. And we just got through Pride Month, right? And
right.
we're And there's 19 to 20 year old kids who have never seen this movie going, seriously, people talk like that back then? Like, people like, yeah, I'm 35. They're like 19. Like, people acted like that. Like, yeah, people acted like that. Yes. And they were just like,
yes.
How is that okay? I'm like, that's the point. It's not.
Yeah. Oh, Sean, that's such a great point. And, you know, in fact, I hope that we are at a turning point, because I heard boys will be boys when I was five.
Oh, gosh, I heard, that's so bad.
I mean, you know, that sometimes it's, you know, that we're just going to excuse or overlook people objectifying someone else or people disrespecting someone else and not see them for the valuable humans that they are. And, you
yep.
know, actually, you know, you brought up the gay Pride Month, and honestly, your risk of being harassed increases if you're gay, of being sexually harassed. And so,
yeah.
Just, you know, it's just not acceptable, and it is old normal. And I'm with you. I'm hoping that we're at a transformational point. It's interesting though, because when when you're online and when you're looking at social media and you're kind of looking at what's happening, the younger generation is moving a little faster than the older generation is moving. And
yes.
in some countries, there's been a real backlash. And so then it's like, okay, well, I'm being punished for being male. And, you know, I'm not a man, so I can't speak to how men feel. But I have taught, and I did write in the book kind of a story about one company where it's predominantly males that are doing the work in the field, and predominantly females in the office. And after Me Too happened, they lost the camaraderie. They lost any sense of levity and joy in the work. And the guys would be like, I'm not talking to any women in this company except about the bare minimum of what I have to talk to. And
right.
one of the investors was telling me about it, you know, so there's been
yep.
a backlash.
Yep.
In some countries,
yep.
Me Too is a joke. And honestly,
yep.
the guys joke about it. And there
yep.
is now contempt being played out on people who, you know, call out harassment. So we're not there yet. But Sean, I'm with you. I would love to see the world reach that moment or reach that transformation where people would kind of look and say, when was it ever okay to treat people like objects?
Yep, 100%. And I have heard those things where I said something, not sure if it's offensive, screw it, I'm just not going to talk to nobody no more, and I'm just going to walk on eggshells. Like, even then, I mean, that's not where it's supposed to go. And sometimes it seems like that's where it goes. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm just not going to say nothing to nobody. Well, no, there's always an extreme everywhere. When I was, and this is going to be super relevant, and I'm not sure you heard this, but if you didn't, you're about to be flabbergasted is a word that I would use. In 2012, 36 military drill instructors in Air Force basic training was court-martialed and arraigned and sent to jail or prison for having sex with trainees, if in fact raping them while in basic training, the male instructors. They found 36 of them in 2012. They found a couple more. I think it was like six or seven more that had done it back in the early 2000s, in 2005, in 2004, in 2006. They were doing it back then, but they were at their new duty station or they had been retired. They just never got caught. All in all, I think they said like 47, 48, almost 50 military drill instructors had been accused and convicted of sexual assault on female trainees going through the service. This was in 2012. And I had female flights. I can't imagine mm-hmm. ever doing that, period. But what they
mm-hmm.
found,
thank you.
What they found was a lack of supervision, And really, I have complete control over you because I'm the drill instructor. I'm screaming at you. I'm bossing you around, whatever. And they took that to the next power. They abused their power. And it was a big deal. The backlash from that alone, the backlash from that made every single instructor, because I was there, and even me, for the first couple of weeks, I was like, okay, I need to be very careful what I say, because it's almost like they're priming the female trainees to even remotely get looked at wrong, come and tell on your instructor. So I was very careful about what I did, but I still trained the same way because I wasn't doing anything wrong. And that's the point I want to get across. The knee-jerk reaction in basic training made the instructors just as uncomfortable as it was the female trainees going through. The male instructor's like, oh, I'm not going to yell at any of them. I'm not even going to interact with them. I'll just have somebody else do it. Well, no, do your job, but do it professionally and ethically and morally. Don't even give the perception that you're doing anything wrong, and you'll be fine. And I hate that the Me Too, even Tony Robbins, like everybody hated on Tony Robbins and still does. Tours have been canceled because of that one time that he mentioned that one lady with that Me Too. Remember that? It was like a year ago.
Yeah, and Tony's defense, I have to say, you know, I saw how he interacted with her. And in defense, you know, I have to say, you know, if we're going to have a transformational moment, not only do we need to have a place where people are going to do no harm, we also have a place where people are able to grow and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Because
100%.
If there's no opportunity to grow and learn, then the fear takes over. And so, you know, I watched that video and I saw, you know, I saw that he was missing the point that Me Too was not about victim mentality. And, you know, and he's been very powerful about get out of victim mentality. But what he was missing was, hey, Me Too just showed a reality that's happened in a world that people have been oblivious to. And we need to not close our eyes to anymore. And you know, I think that, you know, if there's not room for people to grow, and if there's not room for some grace to say, yeah, you know, I got that one wrong, but I'm elevating, I'm moving, I'm transforming, I'm with this, then we may be stuck longer than we want to be.
The one thing that I will say real quick, the one thing that I will say is, because I really strive to look at things objectively from both sides. And what I saw was both sides trying to give their point, and I think that was the big problem. Tony was trying to tell that, like, don't live like a victim. Me Too is not about victim. And the people that are in it are going, but you're not listening to what the Me Too is about. Like, you're not, like, he's fixed minded. They're fixed minded. What I got out of the whole situation was that we need to make light of everything, or bring to light, not really make light of it, but bring it to light. We need to be having these conversations, because that is how transformation happens. And that's why I have the show, to bring things to the surface that people don't want to talk about, because then you can't grow and learn, like you said. So nailed it. Loved what you said. I think Tony was right and wrong. I think they were right and wrong. Why? I mean, if we're supposed to be love, why hate on the guy so hard? Right? It's like with anybody.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think, you know, what we have to recognize is that in our soundbite world, people are saying more than you catch in the soundbite. And people are feeling and learning and growing bigger than 30 seconds or even a 2-minute video. And, you know, I'm not the same person I was last year. I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. And certainly, you know, it's like everybody has to have that freedom to grow. But what you were saying, Sean, about the importance of conversations is really where the power is in the book. Because people won't change their behaviors if they don't change their minds. And if they don't change their minds, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, why even bother trying to have a conversation? Let's just go back to where we were before. But we have to be able to have the conversation. And, you know, the people who have been victimized, what they need to believe is that change is possible, not only for them to be empowered, but for people who've been in the role of society encouraging misbehavior, you know, they can be empowered to change. So there has to be motivation, there has to be peer pressure, and there has to be like ongoing structural support to change culture. And it, you know, it runs really deep. So you're right about that, Sean, that conversations are essential. And that's the reason why I wrote the book.
I love it. What I want the listeners to know right now is if you have a question or want to weigh in on what we're talking about, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. I welcome the questions. I just don't want people to call in if you want to get into some heated debate, because that's not what we're going to do here. Just want to preface that. But if you have a question or, you know, just kind of a take or a comment on what we're talking about, would love to get your feedback. Or you can email us at Sean@thesuccesscore.com. You can let us know or join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community. And you can put your comments inside there on this episode where I've just posted inside of the Facebook group. And we have a chat. If you're listening to us live, you can also join the chat. So you talked about the book, Christine, many times, and I want to have the opportunity for the listeners to get a chance to get that book. So tell the listeners where they can buy your book.
Okay. I have to send you to the Facebook page. So it's facebook.com/lifebeyondmetoo, because the book is in the editing process right now. And I am working with my editors to get it done. But that's where we're going to announce it. But not only will you get information about the book, if you go to Life Beyond Me Too onto the Facebook page, Facebook.com/LifeBeyondMeToo, you'll also get to join. You get to, you know, weigh in. You'll get to put your vote in of that, yeah, I want to be a part of this new normal. I want a world where Sean's 12, 5, and 2-year-old daughters are going to be safe, you know, and where mine are, right? I want that kind of world. And I want to look at the movie of life in 20 years from now and be able to look back and have people ask me, did people really do stuff like that? Like it's, you know, ancient history. So you can go to facebook.com/lifebeyondmetoo and, you know, join in the conversation there, and you'll definitely get information about the book. And writing a book is a lot of work. You know, you think you're done, and then the editors say, no, you're not done yet. We'll do some, do some stuff, make this more readable. I've actually, Sean, I had two editors and a couple of literary agents tell me I have to take off facilitating global transformation from the title, because that's not what people want to read. They have told me people want to read what they personally can do. And so I need to make it more personal, and that, you know, we are
relevant,
having one conversation at a time. And so we are keeping the Life Beyond Me Too. And you go to the Facebook page and join the conversation there. And I just invite all the listeners to do that.
I love it. Love that. Is it going to be available on Amazon? Is that the plan, to have it on Amazon as soon as everything's done editing? And, you know, so as of July 3rd, because the show is live, July 3rd, it is being edited.
Being
and so
edited.
I'm assuming it's going to be on Amazon and all that. Did I send you my But okay, yeah, okay, perfect. So you've got everything
It'll
there.
It'll be everywhere. It'll be everywhere. And,
perfect.
You know, yeah, this is one of those. And you know what? I just purposefully made sure the cover was designed by somebody, by a man who understands what it's like to be a man picking up a book in the airport. And you can pick this
yep.
one up at the airport. I mean, you'll be able to pick this one up at the store and not feel like, oh, I'm reading my girlfriend's book.
Right.
You know, it's for everybody.
Yeah.
It's very appropriate. So you can see the cover on the Facebook page.
Perfect.
It'll be everywhere. And it's going to be one of those books that, hey, you know, right now it's not really comfortable talking about, you know, grandpa or uncle or you know, that some of those smaller companies where the bosses still don't understand that harassment is really out and it really
mm-hmm.
is unacceptable. And, you know, you work for them. I sat next to a guy on an airplane and he works for a company where the owner of the company is, you know, kind of renowned in the industry for being inappropriate at conferences and really crossing
oh
the line
gosh.
With people. And he, you know, he was this guy's, he was pretty high up in the company and said, I'm looking to leave because I need to find another company to work for because I can't associate myself with these people anymore. So
100%.
I think that people who are kind of in denial about the fact that the culture is changing, you know, they have more costs than just the risk of being, you know, sued by somebody. They also have the risk of losing money and just losing, you know, losing the confidence of customers and stuff like that too.
100%. I agree with that. Definitely agree with that. So what do we do? Where do we go from here? How do we transform? How do you elevate the world around you? What do we need to do?
Okay, so I do talk about it in the book. And I do use some models in the book
mm-hmm.
that we really, you know, kind of need to look at. And there's a great book by Carrie Patterson, Joseph Grinney, David Maxfield, Ron McMillan, and Al Switzler, and it's called Influencer. And it really talks about how do we create systemic lasting change. And in the book, they talk about sources of influences and a change model that address what motivates people and what their abilities are and what their social and structural supports are for change. And in order to make change happen in the culture, we need all that. We need all that because doing marches without having laws change won't make the changes. Because having a law saying that one woman on your board is part of the law now in California. Okay, that's
yeah,
not enough,
I saw that.
Right? Or doing change where, you know, like for example, in Liberia, the Vice President Jewel Howard Taylor called women out to join in a protest about their domestic violence law that they passed on last month, and the male-dominated legislature passed the domestic violence law, which they've been waiting for decades for, but they removed the section on FGM, right? So over 200 million people worldwide, women have been impacted by FGM. There's no reason for this practice. And,
what's that?
You know, that's called feminine genital mutilation. Okay.
Oh,
so it's actually like the cutting
they
do. Like it's, you know, and so they had this bill where it was illegal and they cut that section out. So what we need for transformation is a world where one person at a time, one voice at a time, one conversation at a time, one action at a time, one vote at a time, people take a stand and say, I won't participate in old normal anymore. I want to be a part of new normal. I want to be a part of a world where people don't objectify people or damage each other because of gender.
100%. Sounds like a great place to live.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I believe in a world where when we're all better off, we're all better off.
Right. I want to reference two episodes right quick. Back in April, I had my friend Ed Squire on the show, and he has a nonprofit that he runs called Me Too What Now. And the reason I mention it is because, you know, I kept thinking, as you were saying, you know, sitting on my uncle's lap and, you know, doing the, like, it happened, like family members, like it happens. And his was a teacher, and then his uncle and his grandfather, and like it got pretty dark. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode, the listeners who are listening right now, it's a great episode. It was back a couple months ago in April, Ed Squire. And then one of the episodes that I had on just a couple weeks ago, that is a really great episode. It was a couple, and they were talking about gender inequality as far as women getting paid less than men, specifically 80 cents on the dollar. For every dollar a man makes, a woman only gets 80 cents paid to them for every dollar. So there's a big pay gap. And I think this just culminates what we're talking about. When you said the FGM and you want to live in the new normal, and like, when is it that, I mean, the whole board member thing just kind of, like, why are we forcing this board member must this, like, we're forcing the women equality onto them rather than just accepting it, which I think would get a better response from people if you just accept the fact, like, look, this is the new normal. This has to happen. You know, it's kind of like when we, you know, women were voting. I wasn't alive to see it, but from what I've read and, you know, and all that, which can also be misconstrued, but it was a fight. It was a fight. It was a fight. But it's a new normal. Like, it happened.
Right.
It got passed.
Well, you
it's
know,
the
it's,
new
yeah.
normal. So just
and
establish the new normal.
Generations. Absolutely. It took generations
to
of work. Right. And you know what? It wasn't the women that were having a hard time accepting that one. I just want, although there were
some. Yeah, I'm sure.
But,
yeah.
Right? And so people, you know, to get to the point where you question, hey, is the way things are really better off? Because, the evidence shows that, like, with companies that have more than three women on their boards, they outperform in every way. The companies that have that diversity mindset outperform other companies. And,
yep.
And businesses that, you know, really create that culture of respect from day one, they're not worried about sexual harassment lawsuits because they're
100%.
Busy rocking their work, having an amazing impact on their clients, and, you know, they have an amazing culture. So it's a new normal for them. I mean, you know, it happens all the time, but it's hard-won work. Like, for example, in New York this summer, there's a female majority first time ever film fest called 51 Fest. I think it's at 51fest.org. And the one thing they have in common is that they put women at the center of the story. And, you know, little by little, step by step, that transformation is happening where, you know, your daughters are going to have a chance and maybe they won't be. I think it's agreed with Elvis, right? Elvis is a female investing firm. It's supposed to take, I think leanin.org also did a study that's saying it's supposed to take like 200 something years over to balance that pay gap. And I'm like, no, this is just not acceptable. Let's get it done quicker, okay?
Wait
200 years.
Right.
And I read an editorial in the New York Times, and their reasoning, they talked about the gender pay gap there and said it's because women don't elect to work as much. And so that brings up the whole conversation of unpaid work. And if you're a single working mom and you've got to take care of kids, you know, or if you bear the disproportionate amount of unpaid work,
right,
then you can't take the overtime hours. And so there, you know,
yeah,
there's all sorts of conversations to be had about why are things the way they are really, and
sure,
and how do we change it? So we
right,
look at all
yeah,
that stuff in the book for sure.
Perfect. I love it. What I want to say before we wrap up, something that I was just kind of thinking about, and I'm not sure how to articulate it without it sounding weird, but you know, you said, you know, it needs to happen now, right? With, you know, not 200 years from now with the pay gap and, you know, and all that stuff. There is a, so I will touch on the, cause you know, there's women empowerment movements, right? All the time. And there's a lot of women empowerment, women only, no speakers. I know that in the different groups that I'm in, I always talk about we need more female speakers. I would stand up, you know, all that stuff. I love that. And there's a podcast event happening in the fall called She Podcast. And it's an all-women podcast event. Super pumped about that, because that's like, we need more women podcasting. Like, that's super awesome. And we need more women guests. And I just, what I'm thinking right now is I guess, one, why did it take so long? And two, is it offensive to the guy? Like, are we thinking about this? Like, is it offensive to the guys? Like, how come the women are getting so much, you know, highlight? Like, why are we hiring the people who need to be hired based on merit? Or are we forced to put a woman on our board even though she's not qualified? Like, that's kind of what I'm thinking right now. Are we doing a disservice to the woman who gets put on a board who's not qualified to be there just because a law says so? Or would this be the first step in accepting, like, well, we have to have a woman, so we have to find the qualified person, right?
And yeah, and you know, that might be,
it's tough.
That's an interesting question. And the thing about it is what if that's not the question? What if the question is,
okay,
who's the very best person for the job?
Right.
And
yeah.
And what if, you know, she happens to be a female.
Yep. That's what I'm saying.
And
if she's
so,
the best putter there.
And, you know, yeah. And as a coach, I have seen many times, and, you know, the statistics show that men are hired based on potential performance and women are hired based on past performance. And they're often kept in roles because they're so excellent in the past performance.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we really need to change the questions that we're asking. And it
100%.
Might not be about, you know, the interesting thing, like, even, I mean, I know we're running out of time, but this is the
yeah,
same question that happened in the 70s with affirmative action. And you ask any, you know, any African-American person who worked their tail off, went to, you know, graduate school, outperformed
mm-hmm,
any other people, and they get into a C-suite type of a job.
Right.
How many people asked them, did you just get there because of affirmative action? And
yeah,
you know, they didn't. They worked their butts off. And so,
right,
you know, it's a similar situation. And you know, we do have to ask ourselves, is the legal route and is legislation the way to create this change, or would we rather do it a way that's fair and doesn't have people questioning whether or not they're going to suffer? But if you
definitely
look at the long history of how women have been treated and the numbers of violence that's happening again, clearly something needs to be done. Or we're
100%.
Gonna stay in old. Yeah, we got to get out of that old normal.
Absolutely. Christine, thank you so much for your bravery, your courage in tackling such a global movement like this, and the courage to tell your story. Thank you so much for being a guest on Life Transformation Radio.
Oh, thank you, Sean. And thank you to your listeners for engaging. Thank you so much. Yes, appreciate you going to the Facebook page on LifeBeyondMeToo.com on the Facebook page there and getting involved.
Perfect. For the listeners, if you want to book a call with Christine, there's the bit.ly link right there, book meeting with Coach Christine, book meeting W Coach Christine. The link's right there. Go book a call with her and connect with her on Facebook and LinkedIn. She's absolutely amazing. And if anything resonated with you, please let us know by leaving a rating or review on the show and then connecting with Christine and tell her that you heard her on Life Transformation Radio. As we close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.